Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this Tuesday, March 22nd, 2011, taking you for the next 45 minutes as we discuss the world of sports and a little music as well on the Cyril Quinn Review. We're going to begin, though. Call number 347-215-6180. As always, 347-215-6180. And you can definitely hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Also at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. And we're going to begin with the opening tap, and that is the Barry Bonds trial, which started yesterday. Today you had opening statements. The jury was selected, 8 women. 4 men. I found it curious that they have a 19-year-old college student as one of the jurors. I found that very interesting. But it seems to me that the prosecution, or excuse me, the defense is happy with the jury. Listen, and they've talked about this through and through now. It is almost impossible to get an impartial jury. I mean, listen, unless you lived under a rock or just been in a coma for the last basically decade, you're gonna feel some type of way towards Barry Bonds. That's either you're gonna love him or hate him. There's really no middle ground with Barry Bonds. They've already put prospective jurors out because you had people saying that they had Barry Bonds memorabilia and that they couldn't, you know, they were giant fans and they couldn't separate themselves, they couldn't take the emotion out of this process. But it's going to be impossible for anybody to just, be completely 100% objective. Now you hear them asking the jurors to stay away from Facebook and Twitter. I mean, good luck with that. I mean, you don't even have to have a laptop to have Facebook and Twitter. Facebook and Twitter comes on every cell phone known to mankind. So, that's just not going to happen. I think you have to hope that they could just, see the evidence for what it is, see the both cases presented to them and make a fair decision. And based on what the prosecution has, you will be hard-pressed, and I mean hard-pressed, to see this thing going in any direction but in the favor of one of Barry Bonds. I mean, you have the prosecution, trying to pull, witnesses like Kimberly Bell, his mistress, ex-ball players. I mean, they're really trying to dig. They're really scraping here, scraping and scrapping, and they're really they're extremely desperate right now. And to no one's surprise, you don't have one Greg Anderson, who could break this thing wide open if he ever chose to testify, is going to go back to jail, and he's not speaking. I mean, he's not going to testify against Bonds. And again, to nobody's surprise, Anderson has been consistent throughout this whole process that he refuses to testify. The idea that he's not receiving any compensation for them, to me, is insane. I mean, you have people close to him saying that he's not receiving a dime. He's just, not giving any names. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the guy, he could do 4 years in prison. I mean, when this all comes out, he could easily, whether Bonds is prosecuted or not, he could do Anderson could do that in 3 to 4 years in prison. He's already done a year and, or 14 months. He's going to get sent back. He got sent back today and he, stands. I mean, he's standing tall for Barry Bonds. That's a great friend to have, I guess. So, again, the trial has started. You had the opening statements. Bonds' defense comes out, says, I found this to be funny, says that, he had no way of knowing that he was taking steroids, that his trainer misled him. He thought he was taking, he thought he was taking something for muscle aches or, things of something of that nature. Was it a flaxseed oil? Of course nobody, we don't, anybody in their right mind believes that. But it's their word, again, it comes down to his word against their word. And these other small witnesses that they pool, whether it be ex-teammates or ex-business associates who have access to grind against Bonds, are just not going to carry much weight. I mean, they're just not, you need the prosecution, needs Greg Anderson. It's just that simple. Anything else, you're just basically just hoping. Again, this trial should take place, should last about anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. You're certainly going to hear from his mistress, Kimberly Bell. Again, I find her testimony funny because they're going to try to get her on the stand and listen to these tapes of Bonds just, getting angry with her and what have you. And that's supposed to prove that he had warrior rage. Like, it takes steroids to get angry. Again, they are reaching big time with that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we return, we will have today's headlines. We have today's headlines, and we also talk about the NCAA tournament. Look ahead to Thursday's action as the field has been narrowed down to 16 teams. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. After the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, taking you to 8:45 tonight on this Tuesday night. Headlines of the day: Lawrence Taylor has been sentenced to 6 years probation for his role in, of course, having sex with a 17-year-old. At the time, she was 16-year-old. She was 16. It remains to be seen whether or not he will be listed as a sex offender. As a sex offender, they're trying. His lawyers are trying to get the lowest level that you can be listed as possible, of course. And it's no shock that he does not do jail time. But the idea that Lawrence Taylor did not know that this girl was not of age is. It's insane. If you think that, they showed a picture of the girl on TV today. She did an interview, and of course, it claims that he took advantage of her and that he should go to jail, and which I completely agree with her. He should be in jail because this girl. You see a picture of this girl. This girl looks like she's about 12 years old. I mean, seriously, she looks like she's about 12, 13 years old, at max. I mean, at minimum, if you're Lawrence Taylor, you ask the girl, how old are you? Minimum. And then, of course, the girl claims that she was, that he saw that she was beaten. And it's just a sick story the more and more you think about it. Again, Lawrence Taylor, one, I think the greatest defensive player of all time, obviously one of the greats, all-time greats in NFL history, should absolutely be locked up right now. He absolutely should be locked up. There's no two ways about it. Again, this girl looks like she's about 13, 12 or 13 years old. But this is the, you know, this is the system that we live in as far as, you know, money talks. Money talks, and you can get the best lawyers. You know, Barry Bonds has a dream team himself in terms of his law team. And you can get over it, you can get off. Any of us do this, we're in jail. We're in jail. The normal jail. But he gets 6 years of probation. And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't get listed as a sex offender. And again, you know, the girl gets interviewed, and it's just sad to watch. To be honest with you, it is just sad. It's terrible to watch because you see how young this girl looked, and you're thinking to yourself, come on, Lawrence. You've been around women your whole life, you know, your whole adult life. You don't know what you can't tell this girl is not of age, doesn't look nowhere near 18, 19 years old, doesn't look nowhere near 18 years old. You know, I understand, you know, this day and time you have girls, young women who are developed and they look older, much older than their age. I mean, that's just the reality of it. This girl was not one of those girls. Okay, yeah, it just that's all there is to it. And how she talked, and her, you know, just the structure of her face. I mean, the girl looked young. So again, Lawrence Taylor will do 6 years probation. Again, maybe he gets listed as a sex offender, maybe he doesn't. The NFL will move its kickoffs up 5 yards to the 35-yard line. NFL is trying to prevent, you know, they think that this is going to help prevent, not all 100% prevent, but help prevent collisions that lead to, of course, concussions. Concussions have, you know, been a big topic in the sports world recently, especially in the last couple of years. I mean, look what's happened to Sidney Crosby, who hasn't played in about almost 2 months due to his concussion. So they're going to move it up 5 yards, and they're going to keep touchbacks at the 20-yard line. That means there's going to be more touchbacks. I mean, you move it up 5 yards, and that's going to be more touchbacks and less likely a chances that you're going to see big returns, which, you know, hurts if you're a team, if you root for a team that depends on, you know, depends a lot on their special teams in terms of kickoff and punt returns. You know, you have to be a little annoyed by this. I mean, the Bears, Cleveland Browns, Atlanta Falcons, some of those teams come to mind as they have some of the better punt and kickoff return players in the league. And it really hurts a team that has very little room for error. A team that, you know, is decent offensively, not great, you know, that may be okay defensively, that counts on field position. There's certain teams that, you know, there are 500, they're average to mediocre teams that are very much dependent on their kickoff and punt returners to generate quality field position because they have their offenses are not capable of going 75 to 80 yards. If they don't get a good kickoff or punt return, or if they get a touchback, you're going to see you will see a record number of touchbacks next year. You will see a record number of touchbacks. I can predict that right now. Also, the NFL will review all scoring plays. So that was something that had to take place, as, you know, you can't have a situation where you review some of the scoring plays only in certain situations but don't review others. So they're going to review all scoring plays. But again, they're going to keep they're gonna keep kickoffs or touchbacks at the 20-yard line. So there you go with that as far as the NFL goes. NCAA tournament ratings are up big time. There's the highest the ratings have been in 11 years. And it's simple. If you have the ability to move off a terrible game and switch to a game that's competitive, you're going to stay with the action. If you're not satisfied with CBS staying with the game, you know, 2 or 3 minutes too long, then you're more likely to just turn it off and watch something else. I mean, it is elementary, my dear Watson. Very simple. It's no surprise that these ratings are high. I myself found it hard to take my eyes off the action this weekend because you had so many options with True TV, TBS, and the four channels that are covering the NCAA tournament. You could leave a bad game, go to a decent game, and at least when you have 3 or 4 games going on at the same time, there was at least one or two good games going on. Sometimes, you had three very good games. You had to make a tough choice, or choose the one that was closer to the end. But this definitely was the way to go in terms of television. If you're a viewer of the NCAA tournament, you have to absolutely love this. In the past, you would have to pay for it via DirecTV. Now you can just get it over regular cable TV. And then that's another question. Who knows? They might try. I would not be surprised if this continues to take off the way it does. If they don't start charging for this commodity. So don't be surprised about that. 16 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we come back, we will talk about last week's tournament action and also look ahead to the Sweet 16, as well as look at some music that came out today, a couple of new releases. We'll talk about that and a little NBA as well. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We will be right back. Review on this 22nd of March 2011. We're back again. 347-215-6180 is your call number. The NCAA tournament will resume on Thursday as BYU and Florida will kick off the action. Of course, this weekend you had, it's funny, Thursday through, I would say, up until the Butler Purdue game was kind of ho hum. Outside Louisville and the Morehead State game, where Morehead State shocked everybody and took Louisville out. It was kind of like, all right, no real major upsets. You had a couple upsets by seeding, but some of those games when nobody was shocked. Xavier, Marquette, nobody certainly was shocked by that. But then you have, then comes Butler and Pittsburgh, and after that, it was just, boom goes the dynamite. I mean, you had upsets. You had VCU destroy Purdue. You had Florida State taking out Notre Dame. Richmond. You had Richmond. You had Richmond gets it, not upset. not upset. It wasn't certainly an upset in the second round what Richmond did, but you know we all know just for them to get to the Sweet 16 is just a tremendous, it was an amazing accomplishment. And now you have a situation where you know a fourth of the Sweet 16 will be made up of double-digit seeds with Florida State, Richmond, VCU, and Marquette. There are three things that I took away from this weekend's action. Number one, teams that have struggled in the past NCAA tournaments did not let us down, did not let us down by any stretch of imagination. These are the Texases of the world. These are the Notre Dames of the world. You know, Pittsburgh. Those teams, you know, they tease you in the regular season by looking great. Notre Dame, for the better part of the season, was a legit top five, top ten team. You know, second best team in the Big East by record. Texas, at one point, I thought was the best team in the country. You know, I would say early to mid-February. And then Pittsburgh won the Big East regular season, won the Big East regular season title, and had everybody thinking that, hey, okay, this might be the year that they actually make a run to the Final Four. Certainly was not meant to be. Those teams never let you down. I mean, they always let you down if you're rooting for them, but if you don't expect them to do anything, they never let you down. So I took that away from this weekend. The second thing was how many bonehead mental mistakes there were by these players. I mean, you look at the Butler-Pittsburgh game. We talked about that on Sunday morning with the Nasir Robinson, Shelvin Mack, those plays with the fouls, how ridiculous those fouls were. You talk about the Syracuse-Marquette game, Scoop Jardine, who all he had to do with the game being tied, you know, can't even catch the inbounds pass. All he had to do was let the ball bounce in the backcourt and go get it there. He tries to basically walk a tightrope, gets called for over and back, and that, of course, led to Marquette going to hit a three-pointer and basically put the game away. North Carolina, which almost drove, you know, almost had me pulling my hair out, the North Carolina-Washington game, Washington is down by three. They're down by three. North Carolina chooses not to foul, which is, to me, insane. But they choose not to foul. Washington has about 5 or 6 seconds left. The guy throws up a just crazy, wild shot, in which he had at least 2 or 3 more seconds to get off. I would say, at worst, a three-point shot. Maybe, I mean, had a three-point shot. And the guy goes out there and throws up a Hail Mary, which had no chance of going in. And then John Henson, who could have just let the ball go out of bounds, tries to catch the ball, missed the ball, goes through his hands. So they have another shot with 0.8 seconds in. It should have been 1.2 seconds left on the clock. And he almost goaltends a potential game-winning three-point shot. And it turned out that it was a two-pointer as the player's foot was about 6 inches inside the three-point line. But if you're John Henson, you know, what the hell are you doing? I mean, why are you you were for sure, 100% sure that was not a three-point shot, that it was a two-pointer, which he said after the game. I mean, just strange plays. Just, I mean, up and down the board, it makes you, if you were a college coach, you had to be just, you needed some Baylocks during and after these games with some of these plays that these kids were making. And the third thing I took was, of course, and is what everybody's talking about, is the ineptitude of the Big East. The Big East sends a record 11 teams to the NCAA tournament, and they only left with two following last weekend, those being Marquette and UConn. And all that, I mean, and again, hindsight is 2020. It's very easy to say now the Big East is overrated. You know, you had Charles Barkley make his boneheaded crazy comment, which we were waiting. I was waiting for since Thursday. It took him a lot longer than I thought it was going to take, but he finally made this outrageous comment that the Big East had the best coaches but the least amount of talent out of any major conference, which is insane, considering how many pro players will be drafted out of this, you know, out of this class, out of this particular group of Big East players this year and even in coming years. But, I mean, and, you know, Big East only deserved 8 teams and so on and so on. But, you know, that's Charles Barkley. But to me, you know, the Big East, what happened with the Big East was two things. You had matchups and momentum. You look at St. John's, Villanova, Georgetown. None of those teams were playing well going into the tournament. All three of those teams had some injury issues. Corey Stokes was never the same over the course during his injury. Chris Wright tried to come back against VCU. He was not nowhere near the same player that we saw early in the season. And of course, DJ Kennedy was missing from St. John's, and you know, Gonzaga took full advantage of that. So you take those three teams out of the mix. Syracuse Marquette certainly was not an upset. Marquette beat Syracuse earlier this season in their only meeting. And you had, you know, Pittsburgh being Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh, you know, losing to a team in Butler that had, you know, last year almost won a national championship. And Pittsburgh has a pedigree of coming up short in big spots in the NCAA tournament. Notre Dame, Florida State, anybody that knew anything about college basketball knew that that was going to be a tough matchup for Notre Dame. That Florida State had the kind of defense, Florida State was probably the best defensive team in the country as far as field goal against. And they pressured the ball, and they were going to be able to take Notre Dame completely out of their offense because Notre Dame's guards could not handle the ball against Florida State's pressure. And everybody knew when that matchup came out that that was going to be a tough game for Notre Dame to win. The only head scratcher that you saw as far as I'm concerned from a Big East perspective was, you know, Louisville and Morehead State. I'm still trying to figure out how Louisville lost to Morehead State. That one, you know, I'll try to figure that out for the next 5 years. I mean, there's no way. And Morehead State didn't belong in the same gym as Louisville physically. But again, classic second guessing, classic, you know, is classic overreaction to a conference that to me, heads and shoulders, was clearly the best conference in the country. And, you know, it's Big Ten. You know, if we base it on how many teams are left in the tournament, then the ACC is the best conference in the country. So they had the most teams left with Florida State, Duke, and North Carolina. But anybody with a half a brain would know, or who watched college basketball this year, who watched any college basketball this year, knows that the ACC cannot hold a candle to the Big East. I mean, let's be realistic about that. So, you know, the Big East, again, took it on the chin. No question about that. Took it on the chin, but still deserved 11 teams and still, hands down, the best conference in the country. And listen, you know, Big Ten, 7 teams, they only have 2 teams left. I mean, most of these conferences either only have one or two. Most of these BCS conferences only have 1 or 2 teams left. Again, only the ACC has more than 2 teams left in the tournament. 28 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about some new music that came out today. We'll also talk about maybe even a couple other CDs that have come out in the recent weeks. We'll talk about that as well as we'll get into some NBA as well on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We will be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We're going to get into some music now, and here to join us to help us with that is Lady Bird. Here she.
How you doing?
Hello, hello. How you doing today?
I want to first apologize for my voice because I woke up this morning and I did not have a voice. So
no,
I want to
no
apologize.
Problem.
Yeah.
No problem with that. We've all been there if you do any kind of radio. So.
Oh, yeah. And I'm disappointed because I have an interview with Gregory Abbott tomorrow. So that's kind of like I'm drinking lemon juice and all this stuff. But,
oh, yeah, you need a lemon. You need the tea, the lemon, the honey, you know, the whole
oh,
nine
yeah.
yards.
Oh, yeah. So I don't take up too much time in your show. Let's jump right into it. New releases this week, we got Chris Brown, Jennifer Hudson, Raekwon, and a couple other artists. I took the liberty to listen to all three of those albums, and Chris Brown, his Fame album, I mean, most of the songs on the album are already singles on a radio station somewhere. You got Deuces, No BS, Yeah 3X, and most recently, Look at Me Now with Lil Wayne and Busta Rhymes, which, you know, I like that song. Anything with Busta on it is a good song.
Right.
And he also has a song on the album called Wet the Bed featuring Ludacris, which I kind of ran across that song. I was like, let me listen to this, Wet the Bed. And it's really a nice song. It's got a nice beat. And, you know, always Ludacris has to be nasty in some kind of way. And with Jennifer Hudson, I'm a Jennifer fan, but the first song on the album is pretty much the best song on the whole album, in my opinion.
And you're talking about
the first song is called No One's Gonna Love You.
Yeah, No One's Gonna Love You.
That to me is about the best song on the album. I mean, a lot of the songs kind of remind you of a Dreamgirls, and then she's got one song, number 5. It kind of puts me in the mind of the Beyonce Irreplaceable, and you know, with the beat and everything. But I mean,
right.
She's got some hot producers on this album. She's got R. Kelly, Alicia Keys, Swiss Beatz, Polo the Don, Neo. So I mean, she's got good people backing the album, but it's just, you know, it's got a lot of familiar sounds with the album.
I just listened to Jennifer Hudson like right before I came on the show, and I wasn't impressed. Considering the level of production, and like you said, the producers that she had on here, I really had to say that it was an okay album. I think I was considering some of the reviews that I read on it. Steve Jones had a good review in USA Today. I guess I was expecting more. I think that, you know, some of the slow ballads were nice, but she gets herself in trouble, and it's a tricky spot because obviously this is a business and you have to appeal to a certain commercial audience. But she gets herself in trouble with some of these fast pop type songs, dance party type songs. Those songs I listened to them, but if I couldn't listen to them over again if I wasn't, you know, prepping for the show. I'll be honest with you.
Right.
So if I was grading it, I probably would have gave it on a scale of 1 to 10. I probably would have gave it like maybe a 6.5.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that.
Yeah. And then Raekwon. Oh my gosh, I love Wu Tang. I've been a Wu Tang fan since forever. And to be honest, I didn't even know he had a new album coming out, and that's what's so upsetting to me because usually I'm on top of this stuff. And Raekwon, he's got, you know, of course, you know, he's got his fellow Wu-Tang members all over the album. He's got the track Rock and Roll with Jim Jones and Ghostface, which I love Jim Jones also. And then he's got Estelle on the track Chop Chop Ninja. I mean, I heard that. I was like, wow, I'm going to make that one probably a ringtone. That's how much I like that one. And then my homie Raheem Devon. I mean, I know Raheem since 2008. He's on the track From the Hills with Ghostface on that also. And that song, of course, anything Raheem puts his voice on, it's a hit. And then he has the outro with the Wu-Tang chant, you know, so that album from beginning to end was pretty much just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I did like the Raekwon album. I listened to that too before, you know, listening to that today. And I did, from start to finish, is you can, you know, just go right through it. I was kind of, I hadn't listened to a Raekwon album in a long time. The last, I didn't listen to his last album that came out a couple of years ago. The last Raekwon album I listened to was the Lex Diamond, which I wasn't impressed by. I thought it was awful myself. And I wasn't impressed by it at all. But when I saw that he was coming out, I said, you know, let me check this out and, you know, see what it's like. I personally did not read any reviews on it. I just wanted to get a feel of it myself. But I was able to listen to the whole thing, so I was impressed by the album. And I think that he kind of went back to some of the stuff, earlier stuff that he did. I mean, he's Wu-Tang. I mean, that's just
right,
you know, yeah. Ghostface. That's what Inspector Deck. That's who, you know, he can't be anything else but that. So that's I like him, you know, sticking to what he does and not trying to stray away or trying, you know, do stuff. I don't want him, you know, just do Raekwon. Do what you do. So I think he did a good job with that. And again, it's something I'll be bumping this for a couple months into the summer.
Yeah. And then also, there are some other new releases. I mean, you know, I'm the type of person, I get into all the genres. Green Day's got a new album called Awesome as F, I'm not going to say the word. And Kurt Franklin, you know, Kurt Franklin is going on tour with Steve Harvey. He's got his new album out today, Hello Fear. And also Bobby Valentino, Fly on the Wall, which I listened to that album and I kind of wasn't feeling it. I haven't really felt any of Bobby V's albums except his first solo album.
Right.
And that's kind of disappointing because he's had a couple out now, and it's like, when are you going to do something that's just, like, totally different from what we're used to?
So what's the problem? Do you think he's matured as an artist, or do you think he just has remained the same in terms of when he first came out?
He kind of is still in that same, it's like he sounds the same. A lot of the songs kind of sound the same. The beats kind of remind you of a song you heard on the first album, you know,
right,
when he got What's Your Phone Number, you know, that kind of remind you of that beat, beat, beat song, you know.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, can we get something fresh, something that we haven't heard before, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, yeah. I didn't hear Bobby Valentino's album, but, I think he's gonna be one of these artists who just come out with, I think, hot singles. I don't know if he's gonna be able to produce after the first album. I don't think he's gonna be able to produce like just solid albums throughout. I think he'll come out with an occasional hot single. Your dance tour, it'll be a slow song. He kind of reminds me, without being as good a singer, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Brian McKnight. Like Brian McKnight comes out with three or four hot singles, but the whole
right.
he just did his whole albums are not that good. I kind of get that. I think he's not even as good. Obviously, he's not as talented as Brian McKnight. But I kind of get that feel when I hear Bobby Valentino, when I even read reviews on his albums.
Right.
Real quick, I'm gonna let you go real quick. Did you hear? Because I just heard about this a couple of hours ago when I was, you know, doing some getting ready for the show. Did you hear Chris Brown kirking out on Good Morning America?
Actually, I missed it, but I've been hearing a lot of talk and I've been reading about it online. And I guess my opinion on that whole situation is, I mean, the guy comes on Good Morning America to talk about his album. He didn't
right.
come on there to talk about Rihanna, you know, or the incident. Okay, so what? He hit her. He's doing on probation. He did his community hours. He did all that stuff. I mean, why keep hassling him over something that happened 2 years ago? You know, he can't change it. Nobody can change it. It's done. He's got a new album out. He's been working with a lot of great artists, you know, and he's got a lot of collabos on his album. I mean, why keep going back to the past? I mean, yeah.
I was waiting,
he got angry and I think he broke a glass, a window.
Yeah, he broke his dressing room window. I think he broke his dressing room window. But he's still a kid. I mean, he's a grown man, but in a way, he's still got some childish things in him. I watched the interview, not in the entire interview, but the meat of the of the questions that she asked in terms of the Rihanna, it was about 2 minutes and 50 seconds.
Wow.
And I didn't think, the questions, you know, I think she came at him, but I don't think she came at him like, I didn't think it was that serious for him to go, for him to snap like that. I think you got, like, I think she's a journalist. You have to understand about this Robin Roberts. She is a journalist, and she's not,
right.
She's very good. She's not going to ask, you know, these, you know, bubblegum questions. Of course, she talked about his album, but that's something, as a journalist, and I respect her for that, that you have to talk about. Like, somebody comes on this show, and there's some particular information, I'm not looking to dig in your past, but if it's newsworthy or relevant, yes, I'm going to ask that question. So I don't have a major problem with her asking particular questions that she asked. I think he seemed like he handled the interview well. I thought he handled the interview well, but apparently
in the aftermath.
In the aftermath, that's what I didn't understand. I'm like, dude, why? Like, you know, there was a way for him to kind of blow off the questions. He was like, look, I'm not discussing this, and I'm moving on. He kind of said that a little bit, like, I'm focusing on the album, but.
Right.
You wouldn't have thought that he would snap the way he was going to snap based on how he handled the interview. So I was kind of surprised, you know, that he snapped the way he snapped. And, you know, you walking around without your shirt on, you busting, like, that's just not a good look, considering
right.
that you...
Now you got blonde hair like Cisco.
you look like a broke Cisco. So you just... I mean, I heard the album. I heard the album is pretty good. I won't ever buy nothing from Chris Brown, to be honest with you guys. That's my own personal, you know, with the whole... You know, vines against women. That's my own personal choice that I made. But you know, he's a talented artist without question. So we'll see where he goes from here. But
I mean, I've never bought any of his albums. But you know, I still with that whole situation. It's two sides to the story. Technically,
right.
In my eyes, she's never told her side. You know,
right.
In my eyes, because I watched her interview. She's never told her side. He hit her. But what did she do to provoke it? Because She didn't just say something and he just snapped and hit her. You know, it had to be some initial retaliation or hitting, you know, on her part for him to snap off like that. But, you know, they're in the public eye.
Yeah, who knows? But thanks for coming on. And again, we'll get you on. We'll certainly get you on again for our next month for the review of albums on a Tuesday.
Okay, that'll work, and I'll have my regular voice.
All right, I appreciate it.
All right.
All right. And of course, is Lady Bird, who, you know, is certainly into the music and did a great job there with that spot. Again, we'll do it once a month at least. We'll do it once a month. I'm not gonna do it every Tuesday. I'm not gonna do it every Tuesday because I would like. You know, what I want to do is I would like to purchase the albums and then talk about it. I did get Jennifer Hudson. I did get Jennifer Hudson and Raekwon's album, so you know, if we did it every Tuesday, it'd be kind of be broke trying to spend on these albums. But we'll do this at least once a month and have her on to talk about the albums. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. I'm glad to have had you for the last 45 minutes listening to the program. Check out the archive. You can check out the archive program at blogtalkradio.com/Cyril Quinn. You can also check me out again, twitter.com/CyrilGerald/WilliamGerald or facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. I will see you this weekend, Saturday morning wake up call. Still, a time has yet to be determined. More than likely, we'll go 11 to 12:30. But again, a time has yet to be determined. Stay, you know, be on the lookout on Facebook, Twitter, and also Blog Talk Radio for that information down later on in the week. Have a great evening. So long.